Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Friday. Most of us feel pretty good about the fact it's Friday because we're looking at the weekend, which I appreciate. Genesis 1:3, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And he also said, off the record, starting Saturday, let there be longer daylight. Because as you remember, it is daylight savings time. Is it going on or coming off? I never know which one it is. But it's always a hassle for me to set the alarm, to wake up at 2 in the morning, to move the clock forward. It always is such a hassle. I never seem to get back to sleep comfortably. So anyway, remember that when it comes to Saturday night, when you go to bed, make sure you bump your clock ahead. It's spring ahead. Because it is kind of nice to think that spring is around the corner. Not quite yet. Here in the upper Midwest, it's still a little on the cool side this morning. I think when I hit the streets today, it was about 7 or 8 degrees. It was kind of chilly. But anyway, spring is on the way. Let me ask you this. How do you run your business? Does it have theological significance? Is it something that you can from your heart operate and know that you're living out God's call on your life? I think people in business have got a great calling on their life. Have you ever been faced with a conflict that collided with your Christian values? And how did you get through it? That's a question I have for you this morning. Give us a call. I'd love to hear how you work that out, because seems like increasingly more and more it's hard to be a Christian in the workplace. So, can you live out your convictions at work? The number here is 1-877-933-2484. I'll give you that again, 1-877-933-2484. Have you ever been faced with a conflict and it just collided with your Christian values? And how did you get through it? You don't have to be a Christian to appreciate honesty and respect. I mean, integrity, honesty, and a strong work ethic. We know that the Christians have no corner on these particular virtues, but these virtues are important in every area of business, and most important, how we treat people in that area of business. Is the whole goal of business is people, right? So how do we treat them? Do we do it with dignity? Is it a top priority of Christian ethics, how we treat our customers, our employees, and our personnel? Do we do that with dignity? And, you know, the second piece that I was thinking about this morning is God has designed us to work because we are made in his image, and God is a worker, and God's work is creative. It's meaningful. And I think, you know, just thinking about it, though, I mean, he speaks something into existence and it happens. Maybe work would be more fun if I could do that, right? I don't know. So there's been just a ton of books over the last decade or so, you know, just talking about that if you are in business, that is a very high calling as a Christian, and we need to continue to operate with integrity and honesty and dignity. And we're going to talk about coming up after the break with Pastor John Somerville. He had a episode in his corporate career that was so interesting. I had a chance to chat with him last weekend, and I said, you got to come tell that story. That's a good one. So we're going to take a little break at 7 minutes after the hour. And when we return, we're going to continue talking about how to deal with business as a Christian and how, as Christians, we deal with business. Here we go. We'll be back in a minute. Nine minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. We're having a discussion this morning about how do we do conflict when it collides with our Christian values at work, and is it hard to be a Christian in the workplace? Can you live out your convictions at work, or do you have to keep your trap shut? How do you best communicate, relate to people you work with, customers you engage with? Is it just the way you come across? Is it the way you look at them, smile at them, be polite to them? Show them the love of Christ that's inside of you. Do you ever get a chance to articulate your faith, or is that a big no-no? Or have you had an occasion where you have had to be put in a compromise situation, and then what did you do, and how did you dig yourself out of that? I think I don't really go to movies, but there was a movie I think the Kendrick brothers put out, and I think it was about a situation where a guy was being asked by his supervisor to get promoted, which would be more money and everything, and he said that the only thing you're going to have to be aware of is that on occasion, we're going to ask you to cook a book a little bit here and there because this is the way the business works, and this is just the way we do business around here. But it's going to be a nice promotion and all that, and I'm talking to a number of people about this promotion. And he went home and prayed about it and talked to his wife, and he came back and said to his boss, I would love the job, but I can't compromise, and I can't cook the book, so it's not the right fit for me. And, of course, then the boss reaches his hand out and shakes his hand and says, you just got the job, because the other four people we talked to were all willing to cook the books. And I think this is a great example of what it's like when you're in business and you've got a situation that maybe is going to ask you to compromise, and you know in your heart it's not the right thing, but you still want to keep your job and you still want to live out the principles of honesty and integrity. And it's developing and building your own character. And you also want to live for Christ first and foremost. So business can be a difficult, dangerous time. Recently, on Ravi Zacharias, he has talked about this, and I swear he's one of the smartest guys ever in the whole world. Isn't that right? Rebecca's given me the big nod, and I would be that smart if I went to school in India, but I didn't. I went to school here. So he's got a great clip. Rebecca, can you play that for us?
In business gatherings around the globe, particularly amongst highly successful people, is the question of how you build your own character to resist the seductions that are out there. And you see, it is in the building of your character that the reality begins. It is the outflow of the character where ethics really manifest themselves. Who you are and how you define the very essence of your being determines your behavior in the workplace or indeed in the public arena.
Okay, that is got a lot in it, and we're trying to figure out how we are developing our character and how we are growing in Christ and how we are standing strong in our convictions. And I've got my friend and Pastor John Somerville on the line from City Church in Minneapolis, and we had a conversation last week, and I found it fascinating, and I said, John, you've got to come on and tell that story. John, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Having me.
There he is. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for being up early. And the conversation we had last week I thought was fascinating because I thought there's a perfect example of a conflicted Christian who's got something that he's got to do, and it maybe isn't working for you.
Yeah.
I think I lost you there a minute. Did you go away? Oh, there you are.
I'm here.
Oh, good. Excellent. Would you tell that story for us?
Well, Bill, I was when I first started in business, I had a boss I really respected. He was a great mentor. But he put me in an awkward position. We had to negotiate a contract with a supplier for some data, and what I didn't know is he neglected to tell me some information. He was out of town, so I went ahead and proceeded with the negotiation, and during the meeting, they asked a question that revealed that I didn't know everything and that something – it put me in a compromising position, and I knew if I lied, we'd be able to complete the deal and the meeting would be over. And I knew, though, if I told the truth, it was possible they would walk away. And so in the moment, I had to make a quick decision, so I decided to tell the truth. Meeting ended awkwardly. I walked away. I had to go tell my boss the next day what had happened. He was upset. And then a couple days later, we heard back that they were willing to go through with the contract. But I think we were relieved, both for different reasons. We didn't talk about it much, and he left the company. And about a year after that, he wrote me a letter. I'd really enjoyed working for him, and it was a great experience. But in addition to me learning from him, he said in this letter, I really learned from you. And he said, you were right about the honesty issue. I should have never made you feel bad about being upfront with them. He said, I see myself as a person of integrity and honesty, and he was a person like that. But he said, working in a competitive business environment can result in just slip sliding. And he said, I really am grateful that I worked with someone like you. It just helps people like me stay on solid ground with respect to values. And I'm not holding myself up as a paragon of virtue, but it was a moment when I realized doing the right thing can inspire others to do the right thing as well.
Mm-hmm. But you were also running the risk of possibly having this business deal fall through and having the boss very mad at you, and then whatever consequences that would come out of that. So it was kind of a high-risk deal, but obviously you made the right call.
Yeah, no, it was. But I think things are like that sometimes. You do have to take risks. And in that case, God did, I think, enable us to experience the success we needed, but at the same time, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it's increasingly more difficult to be a Christian in the workplace?
I think it's always been. I think there have always been challenges. I don't know if it's more or less, but I think it's always difficult to do the right thing. There are pressures, maybe more, but I think they've always been there to make profit, to do things that will make things easier. So I think compromise is always easy. That's why in the clip you just played, I think character matters. Character is destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And people of integrity, people who really are grounded in historic biblical values and ethics need to be the people who set the tone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important.
A friend of mine who runs a business, during his interview process, when he's looking to hire someone, he will often always ask, what charitable endeavors have you gotten involved with lately? What have you done for other people lately? And it really throws people off their game. So when we come back, John, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about character and how it shapes us in the workplace. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. It's 16 minutes after the hour. I'll be back in just a minute. Good morning, everyone. We are talking about the character that you have as you go to work today. Is it being shaped by God in your work environment? Do you find yourself especially challenged as you're dealing with conflict in the workplace and people in the workplace? Sometimes John Somerville, I'm speaking to him. He's the pastor at City Church in Minneapolis, and it's citychurchmpls.org is his website. And as we are going out as Christians into the workplace, certainly every day we're getting a chance to have our character shaped by the people we encounter and the decisions we have to make. Talk about how God is shaping our lives through work.
Well, I think that too often what we've thought of with our work is that work is there to provide for our families, which it's absolutely true. We need to work in order to eat, as Paul says. We think, oh, we need to do the right thing, and we need to tell our coworkers about Jesus. But I think there's an even deeper and maybe more profound meaning to our work, and that is that, you know, we were given work before the fall. That's something we sometimes forget. The Garden of Eden, they were given work to do, Adam and Eve. And we can do that with excellence, and I believe we can also use it to transform the world. And when we're people of character, people of faith, people who I care deeply about the world, we can do what Jeremiah told the ancient people of Israel living in Babylon. We can seek the peace and welfare of the city. And as people of character, people of faith, people that care deeply about the things God cares about, we can seek to see God's purposes prevail in this world. So it's work is really a profound thing. It's not just something we do and then hope that we can get to retirement and not have to do it.
Yeah. What about encouragement for those who are seeking or really struggling to live out their faith on their job? They want to live with great intentionality with their faith, but they find it oppressive and scary, and they're walking on eggshells all day long.
Well, you know, many of the early Christians were slaves. We need to remember that much of what Paul wrote about work in his letters were written to people who had no freedom. And so we can take some encouragement. He told them to serve the Lord Christ, to honor their masters, to work to the Lord first, and then to the people that controlled their lives. So I think we can do that. But we can also remember, and this is also from Paul, in 1 Corinthians, he said, if you're a slave, if you can seek your freedom, do so. So sometimes it is appropriate for us to look for a different environment. If we're in a toxic work environment, one where we're feeling we're being continually forced with ethical compromises, I think we can look for our freedom. But you know, we can even in difficult circumstances, we can honor Christ and do what's right and take the consequences.
Mm-hmm. John, the Bible writers, they were pretty much aware that the readers or the hearers of the Bible story were, you know, were living and selling and working and playing among people who just didn't accept biblical principles. That was back then. So has much changed since then? I mean, what do you think about how we're out in the workplace today? Most people do or don't accept biblical ideas.
Well, I think they certainly don't. One of the things that's probably changed for us is we've had an unusual, and I say we as being Christians, an unusual period where Christian faith has been maybe part of the accepted fabric of our culture, and it's changing. You know, before the Emperor Constantine made it legal for people to practice religious faith, including Christians, in the early 4th century, we've had, at least in the Western world, an unprecedented time when Christians have been favored, sometimes even made the state religion. Not sure that's wise, but that's what's happened. And now we're perhaps entering a pre-Constantinian world where there's more hostility toward Christian faith. And maybe we need to look back at the early Christians and ask questions about how they lived in light of that. And remember, they ended up transforming culture because they lived these things out honestly and fully and didn't whine and did what they needed to do.
Mm-hmm. Whenever you use the word pre-Constantinian, it almost shuts me down. I have no follow-up questions after that. But what about God? His work is so creative and meaningful. So, and if we're made in his image, should our work also be creative and meaningful? And a lot of people go, oh, I hate my job. I'm miserable. I don't feel like I'm doing maybe what God has called me to do. What if you do if you're stuck in that situation, maybe driving to work right now at a job you don't want to go to?
Well, again, I think that one of the things we need to understand is that everything we do is something that can honor God. Sometimes we think there's a divide between sacred and secular, and that what we do at church or at home is somehow sacred, and what we do at work is secular. But everything we can do with excellence, even if it's in an oppressive environment. And by doing things well and working hard and showing people that we care, and sometimes we can have a lot more influence than we imagine. Now, that doesn't mean that if we're in a job that we're just miserable in, it doesn't fit our gifts, doesn't fit our skills, doesn't allow us to live out what we believe are our values, we shouldn't seek something else. But when we can't, you know, Paul told slaves, you can do what you do in a way that honors God and can transform your world, and they did.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can bring dignity to any job, can't you?
Sure, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And if you can pray in your heart as you're going to your job that today I'm treating this job as an act of worship to you, it might put you in a little different mood, or it might reframe how you go about your day or how you start it.
I think so. You know, if we remember that where we are right now is the place that God has placed us, it may not be permanently, and often I think people, you know, when we find ourselves in a very difficult situation, say, the thing I need to do is today I need to act like a Christian. Today I need to do what I can to honor Christ. And then I can also be praying, Lord, lead me to what might be next so that I might find a place of meaning and purpose in this life. But we can always honor Christ in what we do where we are today.
John, that is brilliant wisdom. I love that. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all that and saying the word pre-Constantinianism. I think I said that right. I'm going to work on that. John, have a great day. I've been speaking to John Somerville. He's the senior pastor at City Church in Minneapolis. That's citychurchmpls.org. If you want to go to his website, his teaching is fantastic. All right, it's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. Minutes after the hour. Good morning. In 1 Peter 3:15, it says, but in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. As we're talking to John Somerville this morning about having character in the workplace, we need to be prepared to let that shine, even if it's just nonverbal. And then we always look for opportunities to be verbal. That's how we do this Christian walk. It's Taking a little news break. We'll be right back. Lots more with Faith Radio Mornings. When we work out, we strengthen our muscles. Author and blogger Kirsten Fiola explains that our spiritual muscles also must be developed and strengthened.
A worldview? Whether you can answer that question or not, you have one. This is Jim Garlow. A worldview is a way of seeing your world, making sense of the world around you. But it's even more than that. It encompasses your philosophy of life, your presuppositions, the things you believe consciously or unconsciously. It's what you perceive as reality. Said another way, your worldview is the lens through which you view everything, even life itself. Your school-aged children are more than likely learning from popular history revisionists who believe America does not have a Christian heritage. Teddy Roosevelt, commenting on America's Christian heritage, said, "The teachings of the Bible are so interwoven and entwined with our whole civic and social life that it would be literally impossible for us to figure to ourselves what that life would be if these teachings were removed." There's more at jimgarlow.com.
It's 36 minutes after the hour. Good morning, Bill Arnold here. We seem to do everything one at a time. We take it one day at a time. We eat one row of Fig Newtons at a time. Everything is one at a time. And my guest this morning, Dr. Rosemary Stein, is talking about saving America one child at a time. She's actually in Omaha today speaking at a big conference, yet she still is willing to get up a little bit earlier and talk to us before she goes to speak and give her keynote presentation. Rosemary, good morning.
Good morning. So happy to be here. Yes, we need to have that philosophy, one child at a time. Thank you for bringing that up.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Now, you've got several presentations coming up at this conference, and it's designed to strengthen mom and to reteach how to parent in a traditional manner again. You're going to have to explain that one for me.
Well, it occurred to me that the reason that America is doing so poorly in our society and our culture is because as moms, we bought into the lie that we are supposed to have another role, the role of going out there, making more money for the family, instead of understanding that our true role in a biblical worldview world is to build people. We build the people that are around us, but we actually build our children by being with them and teaching them and teaching them our ways. When we forgot that and we left that as our primary role, then America started to fail, and this has been going on for 50 years. If each one of us picks up the job of our children, but also looks around and lends a hand to neighbors or family members whose children are doing poorly, then we are saving each one of the children that we see out there. And that would be the conglomerate of children in America. And guess what? Children grow up to be adults. And then we would save America again.
Oh, I love it. So you have a big conference you're speaking at this morning in just a few hours. And what is the topic this morning that you're going to be presenting?
Well, the name of the name of the conference is Heartland Homemakers Association, and my first keynote speech at 9 o'clock is going to be on raising patriots, and so people have been asking me, because a lot of us are either conservatives, Christians, and our children are falling away from the values that we hold very dear. And people ask me, well, how has this happened? I tried to do a good job, and I do believe in the Bible, and we go to church. But yet my child, when she turned 18 or 19, pulled away from the things that were very important to me and never turned back. I started thinking about teach a child in the way he should go, and when he's grown, he shall not depart from it. What is it that we're not doing? And so that conference touches on those things so that we know what to impress in our children from a very young age.
But we get out into the college age, and that's when you start to get away from what your parents told you to believe, and then you start experimenting, and you start dealing with the pressure of being in college and wanting to be cool and fit in. And there's so much liberal views at most every college across America. It's going to be a pretty big temptation for kids to start pushing back.
That's true. But once you form that foundation in that child, he will return back home in his heart. And that's what that scripture is promising us. And so that's what I tell the parent, you know, you never lose faith that the truths that you've left impressed on that child, God has said that that will come back to grow a wonderful crop. And so we've forgotten that when we think that we're forcing our children to be brainwashed by an ideology instead of knowing that this is a gift. And the gift of salvation, the gift of knowledge is a gift that we give to our children. But this thought of ours that we're brainwashing our children has really done us a lot of harm.
Mm-hmm. Rosemary, is there a bill right now to reintroduce the Bible to schools?
Yes, there is. Can you believe that? No, in Kentucky?
I can't.
I know.
My face has a stunned look. You can't see it right now, but it's a stunned look.
I can imagine it.
Yes, yes. So what's going on in Kentucky?
Well, of all things, and the very devious, in a good way, let's say wise sort of way, these legislators in Kentucky decided to add Christian history into the curriculum in school. And it's optional. So who can complain about it?
Right.
Plenty of people, obviously. But it's optional. In other words, all the parents have to decide whether they want it or not, which is beautiful because right there, just by making it optional, you're going to show the people that come out of the woodwork to say, oh, yeah, I want this for my children. And, well, why don't we just let it be an example of whether we should allow optional biblical history training in schools that are public.
Mm-hmm. If it was the history of Islam, would it be the same pushback?
Well, not from bureaucrats and people that would want to tell you how you should be raising your child.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very sad, I didn't think about that, but that's a very sad comment because I think you're absolutely right and it would just be considered history.
Mm-hmm. I always think about Acts 4:12, that salvation is to be found in him alone. In all the world, there is no other name by which you can be saved, which makes me think you bring up the name of Jesus, and that divides the room faster than anything because of its power.
You're absolutely right. And I didn't know how to express it as well as you just said it, and that's exactly why they don't want a Christian worldview taught in our schools again.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rosemary, we know kids really crave connectedness, and I'm not just saying technology because they're completely have mastered that, but there is a study that is, there's no study that supports giving kids all of this electronic gadgetry. There is no study that this is what we need to do for kids. So talk about how these kids are craving connectedness beyond technology.
Oh, I have such a great story from yesterday. I saw this young girl, and she was recently diagnosed with very dangerous seizures, and they don't really have a reason for their being there. Now she's 14, and she's got a brand new world of having to deal with seizures, and she's on an incredibly high dose of anticonvulsant medication. Well, what the parent sat down and decided to do was to spend more time together. They decided that dinner times and breakfast times, whatever they could do, they both work their own jobs, but they decided that we are going to make it a priority to spend time together and to do things together, not just go out, but do things together. This child's seizures that were uncontrollable have decreased, but, you know, she had depression because she could not come to grips with the diagnosis and what it might mean in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly but surely, this girl is no longer depressed. She has a smile on her face. She feels confident. And it comes from her family has supported her and spending time with her. And that self-confidence has unleashed in her an ability to see that she is going to be okay. That's what happens in our homes. It's better than medicine when we connect with our children and with our family.
Mm-hmm. Rosemary, are there studies that support not giving devices to kids?
And oh, absolutely. I can find studies like that very, very easily.
Well,
and in fact, I do.
That's because you study and I don't. That's why I have to ask you.
Interestingly enough, I've brought them up to legislators and educators that make decisions about bringing electronics into schools, and they all greet me at the door and then say, "Oh, we'll take a look at it," and I never hear back from them.
Wow!
And so there's a great desire to bring electronics into children and not to look at the research and not to believe it. Because, you know, the lobbyists and other powers would tell you that this is a great thing and knowledge comes through electronics. And in children's hearts and minds, it's just not so.
Yeah, Rosemary, I hope this interview is helping you warm up for your big keynote address this morning at 9. We're going to take a little break when we come back. I want to ask you questions about the message that kids are getting about marijuana. All right, it's 45 minutes after the hour. We'll take a break and be right back. Minutes after the hour, I'm talking to Dr. Rosemary Stein. She's in the Heartland, which is Nebraska. Is that the Heartland? I think it is, yeah. She's giving a keynote presentation this morning at a conference, and it is extending the Save America One Child at a Time theme, which I love, because, Rosemary, teens today are getting a horrible message about pot, weed, marijuana. What are they learning? What is the message?
Well, and as parents, we don't understand that this message is pervasive in the culture today, but it's that weed is not a big deal, and it doesn't affect you, and that all of this information that they're being taught by the schools, and we have a DARE program that tells them that drugs are bad, but they really think that pot isn't bad at all,
mm-hmm.
and this is all a hype. And that's very dangerous because they are using a pot more and more frequently than we really want to acknowledge.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very big deal. There is in Connecticut, they're debating legalizing marijuana right now for recreational use. And if this starts happening around the country, this is not a good sign, a good direction.
Absolutely. And what marijuana does to the brain in children is a tenfold of what it does to an adult.
Oh.
Their brains are developing. So when we expose a child's brain to marijuana, it will not develop in the way that it should have. So all of the effects that it would have had in an adult are going to be there in a manifold.
Mm-hmm. And you look at what's going on with opioids and how accessible something like heroin is now. I mean, you don't even have to try to shoot it anymore, and it's cheap. And all of a sudden you can try weed and enjoy that to a point where as a kid you're going, why don't I try this now? Because this is not a big deal. Isn't that the way it works when it comes to drugs?
And all of these drugs and the opioids are doorways into even stronger drugs. And
mm-hmm.
we're not understanding that one leads to another. And being in the company of children or kids that do this, and that's going to have huge effects on our children's outcomes.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's. I want to hear a little bit more about the conference you're at. I find it very interesting. It's a Save America One Child at a Time, and you've got three keynote addresses. Tell us a little bit more about what else you're going to be offering up at this conference.
Well, thank you so much for asking. So,
That's who I am. I'm a curious individual.
And very kind as well.
Thank you.
But
let me write that down.
This morning.
You are very kind, Rosemary Stein. Thank you.
And it rhymes.
I'm looking for quotables. Yes, it does rhyme. I'm building my resume.
So this morning, as I mentioned, I'm going to be giving the keynote address of Raising Patriots. But I'm also speaking today about what is education really about. And I want to open the minds of parents to education is not just about giving them a vocation, our children a vocation, but teaching our children how to think. And that's what our founding fathers really meant for us to do in opening up the access to the Greeks and the Romans, is that they would teach educate the child so they would build up to the pinnacle of critical thinking and being able to make good, sound decisions. And that kind of thinking was only given to the higher upper classes. That's why America did so well, because we didn't have a class system. Education was given freely to all that would attend public or the schools that were in the area. Well, we have to go back to that mentality. We're not building a plumber or even a doctor. We're building a person that can think for himself and can flow freely in society and can be whatever he or she chooses to be. We have to go back to that.
Okay, Rosemary, now you've really got me interested, because what class in high school do you go to that teaches you how to think critically?
Oh, see, you have to build that. You can't just get to high school and think that you're going to get into critical thinking class and think critically all of a sudden. But we don't have any classes like that. It would be called logic. Guess what? Even in my daughter's private school, that doesn't exist.
Okay, because what you just said is so important. Learn how to think critically. And I think that's something that I wished I could do a better job of, because I'm wondering in what classes in high school and college did I take where they really trained me how to think critically? And it sounds like there isn't any.
Well, it was a building of it. And you know when kids say, why should I have algebra? I'm not going to be an engineer. Well, you know, it took me a while to figure this out. You give children algebra and calculus and trigonometry because it helps them figure out problems. That same process is the process that a child uses to figure out how to think in a clearer fashion.
Rosemary, you and I both know there should not be letters in math.
It does complicate matters somewhat.
It does. But let's talk about growing character into the lives of your children as well. It's really nice to get them to think critically, but how are we growing their character?
Well, you see, the formula before, and America knew it well, was that you educated the minds of the child, but you brought up and also educated the heart of the child. And so the school system and the home were working together. And when we were working together, not giving the benefit back to the child, and instead knowing that the benefit was given to the adults of, you know, how the child was behaving and what needed to happen, then we were building good citizens. Well, we've fallen away from that. And so much of the responsibility, I say more, is on the parents of the child to make sure that what's happening in the schools is good, but also that we're teaching them good values. And that's what makes the child behave well at school. And we're not getting that.
Mm-hmm. Rosemary, how about a little shout out, a little praise for all the moms out there that are working so hard? And, you know, you talked about women needing to go into the workplace, wanting to go into the workplace to seek more significance. And you're saying that maybe the trend is let's get back to a more traditional manner. And maybe there are moms out there right now that are sitting at home going, okay, that's what I'm doing. So how about you love on them a little bit?
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I think that when moms are home and have dedicated themselves to spending time with their children full time and raising up their children so that they can become good men and women, I think that is absolutely fantastic. And I I praise you, and I pray for you ladies every day. It is not easy to spend your time in the company of children, and you feel like your mind is leaving you because, wow, I mean, a five-year-old and a four-year-old and a two-year-old all day, you feel like you're a child yourself after a while. But you are doing this for a purpose. You are bringing good people into the future of America. And let me not – I want to make sure that I don't get this message wrong. But for you that are working, I praise you also. My mom was a full-time worker, but she made sure she came home and she spoke to me and she told me – she asked me about how my day was and she imprinted on me good things. You can actually – and some moms don't have a choice. You have to work, and you make it work. Ben Carson's mom made it work, but that's what moms do. Mm-hmm. We make sure that we give all of ourselves to raising up that next generation of Americans.
Yeah. We learned so much from our moms. About everything I learned about prayer, I learned from my mother. She used to say, you better pray that comes out of the rug. So you learn how to pray real quick.
That's right. And those messages like that, they're imprinted in you and they never leave you. And
that's
you look
right.
at a rug, and I'm sure that even today you say, I pray that that comes out of the rug.
I do. You're absolutely wonderful, Rosemary. Have a great day and good luck on your keynote address this morning.
Thank you so much. You have a
you
great
bet.
Day as well.
Thanks. 57 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be right back. A little tiny break. Be back in a minute. Fifty-eight minutes after the hour, a special welcome to those who are tuning in on one of our new signals, 94.1 FM in Hartford, 93.1 in Waterloo, 104.7 FM in Madison, and 90.7 FM in the Twin Cities. And of course, you can always just get that app on your phone or your iPad and stream online. Thanks for being such faithful listeners and faithful givers, and we love you. I hope your day's starting well. We're going to take a break. Lots more Faith Radio Mornings when we return.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.